Welcome to OK Sis. We are two cultural observers
and curious minds who happen to be related.
I'm Scout.
And I'm Maddie. Get ready for some serious sororal energy
as we chat about and comment on one another's current fixation of the week.
Ready, sisters? Hello and welcome back to OK Sis. My name is Maddie.
And I'm Scout, and we are the sisters. You say OK Sis podcast and then I say it, so it sounds weird, but we are sisters IRL, and I would just like to formally apologize for this intro because I am feeling quite ill. Not the COVID, don't worry. Just weak, dizzy, tired, and let's see if I can formulate coherent sentences and a good energy level here.
Yeah, so your energy level is typically low, but like today it's just like in the negative space.
I need a 4-hour nap.
Yeah, that's probably doable.
I mean, not really, because it's 4 p.m., so I can't take a 4-hour nap right now. That's okay.
All right, let's get on with the episode. So previously on our earlier episode this week, we talked about that petition to get a Black Bachelor. So we're sorry that it came out after, because we hadn't heard the news that Matt James, 919, is officially the first Black Bachelor. He has never been a Bachelor contestant, and it is fabulous news.
But he's Bachelor adjacent because he's Tyler's
right. He's Tyler C's best friend. He's very well known in Bachelor Nation, so it's not that big of a surprise, but it is kind of strange that he has never been on the franchise or been part of the cast.
Yeah, but it's a good move. They chose correctly. I think he's already a fan favorite just from being in Tyler's life. And so I feel as if he's become like part of Batch Nation just in that right. So I think they made the right move because he's already beloved by Batch Nation. I think it's going
to
be good.
But we don't want to let ABC off the hook just yet. I was listening to Rachel Lindsay on Bachelor Party with Juliette Littman. Everyone knows my favorite Bachelor content podcast. And she was kind of saying that, yes, this is great news, and yes, this is a move in the right direction, but it cannot stop here. And until she sees systematic change within the actual structure of the show, within the casting of the show, she will not be pleased. And I think that is a really good kind of attitude to have. Like, we shouldn't just be like, okay, great, now he has, it's again, as I always say, my favorite phrase, moral licensing. You can't just throw a Black Bachelor out just to appease people. And she said it felt like a knee-jerk reaction to what is going on in the world, which of course it pretty much was. But I think we need to hold them a little more accountable than just picking a Black lead. There needs to be diversity in the actual cast. And yeah.
Yeah, I understand. But I do think we should celebrate this monumental moment because it is a historical moment in Batch Nation. And I think that we shouldn't let it, you know, just slip, you know, how, you know, slip by just because it's, the work isn't done. I think we should definitely celebrate the steps that are being taken and continue looking forward to the steps that hopefully will be taken that we can hold them accountable for. So I cannot wait for the season. It's probably not going to be for like another year. So we got a while.
Yeah.
Also other news. Caitlin Bristowe is going on Dancing with the Stars. Congrats, girl.
Justice has been served.
Yes, it
has. She has wanted to go on Dancing with the Stars since literally she was Bachelorette, and it's coming full circle, and we're very, very proud of her and excited for that journey of her life. I'm just waiting for her and Jason to get engaged. I know.
They posted a photo today, and I thought for a second maybe they were engaged.
So that was from a photo shoot that they had done a while ago, and when those photos first came out, people were like, wait, are these engagement photos? They're like, oh no, sorry, this is like just like a product shot. It was like a promo or something. So it was very misleading, but she had posted on her Instagram that they were looking at rings. So it's going to happen soon.
Oh my God.
Additionally, Francesca and Harry from Too Hot to Handle
dun, 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 dun.
Have broken up. I think we all saw that coming from a mile away.
I mean, but he just proposed like a month ago.
So yes, but he's also is getting like a taste of the fame. He is all over TikTok.
He's also like 22.
Yeah, he's young, and he has been doing a lot of TikToks with she's in the vlog squad. Carissa?
Don't ask me.
She's in the vlog squad with David Dobrik, and he has been doing a lot of TikToks with her. So I think he's just been like, oh, I can be beyond, and I am like a hot guy, even though Francesca is the hottest. The hottest.
Yeah, she's a babe.
On the planet. I think he was just like, oh, wait, I can't settle down now. Like, look at me and look at all the TikTok followers and the hype
house.
So
you think it was his? Did you watch her YouTube video?
Yeah, she said he broke up with her.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. So we send her all of the love. I hope she gets TikTok famous, which I don't even know if she's on TikTok. I need to check. But they're going to be fine. They have like 4 million plus followers.
I know, it's
on Instagram.
So
it's out of control. That metric is beyond any reality TV show. Like, no one on The Bachelor has that much. Like, it's wild.
And The Bachelor is like a very established institution.
I know. Just
even
to
like
show.
Stassi and Sheena don't have that many from Vanderpump.
No. Yeah.
The Real Housewives don't even have that many, and they're like reality TV royalty.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's our little pop culture updates.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So
don't ask me to contribute, you know, beautiful thoughts right now.
Okay. Sorry. Brain fog and life. Okay. So let's get into some housekeeping. So everyone knows we have a newsletter. Shout out. Go to OKSaysPodcast.com in order to subscribe.
Or just hit the link in the show notes.
Yes. And then we have an Instagram at OKSaysPodcast. I mean, there's like premium content being churning out over there. We also have a
Facebook page. Facebook page.
I was like, what the fuck am I trying to say? Secret Facebook group, OK Sisters. It's lit over there and very fun. And then we do have some merch from Girl Gang the Label. If you go to girlgangthelabel.com and search OK Sis, you can also use the code OK Sis for 20% off. I hope it's 20% off.
Yeah, it's 20% off. Okay. And it's really cute. We have sweatshorts, crop tops, crop sweatshirts, bucket hats, mugs. Yeah. Tote bags, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, we want to see some TikTok dances in those outfits. And that is all for housekeeping.
Yeah.
Also, you should probably like subscribe to this podcast if you're listening. That'd be great.
And we're excited that we're releasing an episode on Thursday because we can and we want to. And
yeah, you know what? No rules in the COVID and the queue.
Yeah, let's
let's
keep the content going. So anyways, this episode was amazing, nourished my soul.
Okay, we interviewed Amy Ann Cadwell. She is from The Good Trade. And if you guys know, we have been mentioning this a lot of times, their newsletter called The Daily Good, which is just probably the best thing to slide into your inbox other than our newsletter. But, you know, there's room for all of the newsletters. But this one in particular, The Daily Good, it is something that is just so tender and really reflective. I think it's just, you know, that she puts these prompts at the beginning. We talk about a little bit in this episode of like how she develops and comes up with these beautiful observations and things, her thoughts that she puts into, you know, every single day she has to write these prompts. So yes, it was extremely nourishing.
She is such a beautiful angelic soul. She's got all the self-care tips, all the mental well-being, all the balance stuff. So all the sustainability information. I mean, just an angel. So we think you guys will all enjoy this. And I think it's the perfect little mental health perk on a Thursday. So
yes.
Enjoy, sisters.
Enjoy, sisters.
Amy Ann Cadwell is co-founder and CEO of The Good Trade, a premier digital destination for sustainable lifestyle content, annually reaching over 50 million highly engaged readers across web, social, and newsletter. Cadwell is also an angel investor and advisor for early stage lifestyle consumer brands. She has been recognized by Forbes and is a frequent speaker at conferences such as the Heart Series, Blog Her, and the Yellow Conference. Without further ado, Amy Ann.
Hi. So happy to be here.
We are so excited to have you. As everyone knows, I mention The Daily Good, which is your newsletter from The Good Trade, about maybe every episode because it is such an inspiring way. I literally wake up and get excited to check my inbox. And I love newsletters, but yours, something about it just feels, obviously it's very short, so it's very digestible, which is
helpful. And it's just inspiring. There's literally no negativity in it. It is incredible.
Oh, thanks. I love hearing that. It's such a like zing of happiness to hear when people like to open their inbox to get our newsletter. Mm-hmm. It feels really good. And we love connecting with the amazing women and men and people that follow along every day.
Yeah. So Mads told me I had to subscribe too a while ago, and I did. And honestly, I go through my email every morning and I just check the ones that I can just click read real quick, but I always leave yours because I love reading the entry quote. That's my favorite part, is the entry quote of the newsletter.
Thanks so much. Yeah, we have so many team members dedicated to the newsletter, even though it's like so short and sweet. We pour so much love into every edition, and I'm so glad that it doesn't get marked as read without actually being read.
Yes, we love it.
Oh no, never. So you are like a self-care queen. So we are going to get into all that because I feel like you have such great tips and mindfulness exercises that you can kind of share with us. But first, let's get into current fixations.
Okay, so my current fixation is, and I think I'm super late on this bandwagon, but I've been using them for a while, but I haven't spoken about it, but scrunchies. And not because of the 90s throwback or the nostalgia or like the aesthetic of scrunchies. For me, I didn't realize because I have curly hair. And so when I put a regular, what's it called, hair tie, it leaves a mark, like it indents my hair, so I can't ever wear my hair up and then the next day wear it down unless I wash it and redo it. So with scrunchies, it doesn't crease your hair, it doesn't like put that indent in the middle where it was, and I can wear my hair up in a bun one day for half the day, I can take it down and then wear it down. Like, it's amazing, especially, I don't know about straight hair, I don't know how that world works, but for curly hair, scrunchies are it.
I love scrunchies so much, and I have a very sad story about scrunchies, just a very quick anecdotal story. I was obsessed with scrunchies over the last couple of years, and a year and a half ago, we got a puppy, and he's like a giant puppy. He's like 85 pounds, and he eats my scrunchies, and he totally gets like totally upset stomach, and so at one point, my partner, my husband was like, no more scrunchies. Like, we can't do the scrunchies anymore because it's ruining Clifford's stomach. And so sadly, I've turned to like the silk hair ties, which also help with like that crimp in your hair. So that's an alternative if your pet eats your hair products.
Girl, you just got to put your scrunchies in a drawer.
I know. But like, you know, they'd like go on the wrist and then you'd take it off and put it on the counter when you're cooking or something, and somehow he'd find them.
Yeah, I hear you.
Also, the fact that your dog's name is Clifford, I am dying.
He's pretty cute. He's pretty great. He's very popular in the neighborhood, I would have to say. He's just a big, like, goofy guy.
Aw, so sweet. Okay, so my current fixation is actually something that I did find from the Goodaid. It is a playlist that you guys made. It's called The Soothing Edit, and soothing it is indeed. Everyone knows that I like to listen to like jazz or something in the mornings or while I'm working. And I don't know, just recently I've been in this like rut, this music rut, because I'm usually listening to podcasts. I haven't been listening to a lot of music recently, but this playlist kind of satiates both of those needs where I'm discovering new music, but I'm also feeling like it's not like ramping me up, so I can put it on while I work. And it is just, it's an incredible playlist. So I encourage everyone to go look it up, The Soothing Edit.
I love that playlist as well. And our whole team contributed to it. And it's just like a really nice, like, wake up in the morning and listen to it or work to it. And I'm always looking for music I can like play in the background while I'm working and have it be kind of like gentle. And so my like fixation right now is Normal People. Both the book by Sally Rooney and the adaptation on Hulu. It's fantastic. I have not been so in love with novels. Like, I'm always in love with novels, but Sally Rooney is fantastic. I love both of her novels. And then I don't usually, you know, like, love the TV adaptation or movie adaptation of a book that I've so connected to, but Normal People is just, like, got me. And I think it's some of it's like the escapism and the romance right now. And you're like, oh, it's just nice as we're all kind of stuck in our homes.
You are preaching to the choir.
Yeah. So yeah, this is like no secret. Scout and I are Normal People stands. Awesome. So I read Normal People a while ago, and it is still stands as one of my favorite books. And also Conversations with Friends is an incredible novel as well. So I had encouraged Scout to read it. And so Scout is bipolar, and she can talk about her experience reading the book, but it was a little challenging for her to read it and get into it, because there are a lot of like psychological elements that can be kind of triggered, which I didn't even like think about when I recommended it to her, because I just love the story and it feels so relatable. But in terms of the Hulu series, I don't think I've ever like experienced a book and an adaptation that is equally as good. Like the Hulu series, obviously I agree with you. It's like escapism, and we're all kind of indoors right now. We're just like, you know, it's like very porn-y, which is great for our vibe at this time. And we love it. We love the sexual positivity. And I think that's, and the chemistry between those two actors are just like, I mean, palpable. So highly recommend. Obviously, Scout, you want to talk about your Normal People experience? I feel like we all have a Normal People experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I read the book, and like halfway through, it really triggered me. I was really depressed. I was like, this girl, Marianne, has a lot of issues, and that I've felt very similar to her. We have different traumas, but I felt very similar to her in that point in her life, in her early 20s, going to college. And it bothered me because I just didn't see her getting help. I didn't see her growing or evolving or, you know, taking care of herself and really putting herself in positions that actually really hurt her and, you know, literally and emotionally. And so it was hard for me, and I had to take a break, but I could recognize that it was such a beautiful book, so well written. I'm highlighting like everything. And so I just waited until I was in a better space to finish. And I haven't seen the Hulu series just because I just finished the book last week. And I just think that I need some more time to like have that much and just have that much type of content in my face that too much, but I do plan on watching the series because I have heard it's amazing. And I also am just really interested. I think I'm just going to look up the cast because I'm so interested to see who they cast for Marianne.
You might be disappointed that she's like so much more conventionally beautiful than I think the book kind of makes it feel that she is.
It makes it feel like she's ugly. And I'm like, she's so beautiful.
Right. Totally. And I do feel like that's something that a lot of people resonated. I resonated with that feeling of like feeling like truly unloved at that time, that you are not worthy of love because you're not this like typical, you know, pretty girl at, you know, the young age of like high school or something. And I think, you know, however beautiful any of us are, none of us feel very beautiful at that age in our life. And so, but the book made it seem that she was like really not conventionally, you know, attractive. And so, well, I was just going to say, I love the intuitiveness to your, and the sensitivity to your own journey and mental health to take a break when like that was conflicting with what was like nurturing you or giving back to you, and being able to, you know, set something aside and return to it or not return to it kind of like in your own time. And I think that's like such an important skill to develop, is like, what am I consuming and digesting, and how to like pay really good attention to that.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I'm so sensitive, so it kind of almost, my body just tells me immediately, like, this is not working right now, you need to shift to this kind of mood. And it was just an inherent feeling. I got in bed one night and I was like, I think I'm ready to finish Normal People, because I felt the emotion, I felt sad for Marianne, I kind of separated her from myself, and I was like, I can now just view this as a great piece of fiction about you know, a human condition story. And so I finished it and I was stoked, but I am going to wait a little bit before watching the Hulu series.
Yeah. I skipped one of the episodes in the Hulu where she has some more, I don't want to say anything to give it away, but like there's a relationship that's maybe not, so healthy for her, as you know, in the book. And like, I didn't want to watch that. I didn't feel like that would be good for me, to kind of see that visually. And so, you know, I think that's a good thing for people to think about too, is like, are there aspects of a story that you can like just disengage from and then, you know, re-engage or hit fast forward or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that takes a lot of self-awareness and self-surveillance to really recognize. I mean, I feel like I struggle with that. Like I can't stop reading books halfway through. Like I have to finish certain like things to see it through. And so that's a really good practice, is to be like, you know what, this doesn't serve me, but other aspects of this project or of this entertainment or media should serve me. I mean, you can kind of translate that to social media and to Instagram. We always say like, just unfollow, like you're curating your feed. So if something is not bringing you joy or inspiring you or motivating you, unfollow. Like you have the power and control to unfollow those people. And it can be challenging sometimes because you don't want to either hurt their feelings or what have you. But no, like if it's not serving you, then it's not fair.
And the mute button is great to not have to, you know, like formally unfollow someone, but to really be selective about whose voices you're letting in your life. And you might feel different in a couple months or a month, or you might never feel different. I definitely have in-laws that are permanently muted.
Yeah. I love it.
Probably shouldn't have said that on a podcast, but
whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what? We're being transparent. We're being real. We're being honest. That's the vibe. So So let's get into The Good Trade. Just the most soothing, nurturing, calming platform, I would say, on the internet. Mm-hmm. And I'm always interested, whenever I see something on the internet where I'm like so compelled and it actually brings me joy and motivation, mm-hmm. I listen to that and I kind of like meditate on it. And I'm like, why does this make me feel so good? Because so many parts of the internet are just so negative and disturbing. And so, but this feels like just something that I love the internet because this exists is my like viewpoint on it. So I want to hear more so how you started this. What's the origin story here?
Yeah, totally. Starting the publication in 2014, I was in grad school at the time studying social entrepreneurship. And at the time, I was really kind of exposed to this way of thinking about business and brands that really called them to do more than just like maximize shareholder profit and actually care about the planet and the people involved in their supply chains and all of that. So I started the blog at the time just as like a hobby to start kind of talking about companies that were doing better by both people and the planet. And started talking about, you know, ways to like support the environment. And especially like 5-6 years ago, like these concepts about like fast fashion versus slow fashion, these were like really new. Not a lot of people knew kind of A, what they were, or B, where to navigate to like, you know, shop more locally, kind of align your values with your how you spend and your lifestyle habits and all of that. And so so that was kind of like the initial message, was like helping people with like really tactical ways that they could either build habits in their life or help support brands that did better by both people and the planet. But as our message evolved, it became really clear that like you cannot take good care of the planet or your community if you don't take good care of yourself. And so that's become a huge part of our message as well, to like, you know, offer how do you, you know, what is true wellness, not like commercialized wellness, not like someone trying to sell you, you know, whatever the thing is, but like, what does wellness of, you know, mind, body, spirit actually mean? And when we, I think when we kind of reach that place of more healing and more mindfulness, then we're much better equipped to like take care of the planet and take care of our communities. So that's kind of like the arc of the message. But we, I totally started it as a blog, and then a couple years in went full time. And now we have a team of full-time editors that work from our office in LA, but are all currently working remotely from their houses in LA right now.
What was that transition like from blog to kind of running a site, you know, like having employees and having it more of a journalistic digital operation?
Yeah, such a great question. It was really fun. It was a really fun transition, but also like really, really terrifying and scary. And there were two things that kind of prompted like, this is a hobby to this is a company. And the first thing was just like the amount of momentum around the conversation. So we started having, you know, just so much more traffic to our website and so many comments and requests and messages for additional content that I couldn't even begin to like keep up with the volume of things that people wanted to talk about. And so that was really exciting. So I think at the time I went full time, we were at like 500,000 page views a month or something. Now we're at like 5 million, but it was definitely like, oh, there are a lot of people interested in this conversation. And so that happened. The other thing that happened was I had a health issue that was making it really difficult for me to travel. And my job required a lot of commuting and travel. And it was like a couple year journey to kind of like get a good diagnosis and figure out what was going on. But I stopped my job to kind of focus on the health and like didn't have a plan at all. I was like, okay, I kind of need to make something of this project that I've been working on just so that I can like pay rent and, you know, pay my share of the bills. And so that I think is an important part of my story that I share, just because like, I don't know that I like would have had the courage to just like take the leap. I felt like forced a little bit, and that encourages me to encourage people to like take the leap before they think they're ready, if that makes sense, to transitioning to do their kind of passion, their hobby full time, but only if the numbers make sense, you know, only if there's like a proof of concept that people are really engaged in what you have to offer.
I was just gonna say, I'm going through a similar thing. I just hired another team member for my company, and there's always like, yeah, oh my God, another person on payroll, and it's anxiety inducing. But you're right, like you have to take that leap or else it's gonna stay stagnant.
Exactly.
I was just going to say, we encourage that piece of advice a lot, the start before you're ready. That's how this podcast was developed. That was, you know, how, and I think how a lot of projects happen, because it's, the funny thing is like, you're never really going to be ready. Like, what does that even mean? Like, sure, you can try to prepare. And like, honestly, I think a lot of people trying to get into the podcasting space these days are like batching up episodes and preparing and like creating a whole messaging and da-da. And it's, I get that and it's important, but why not just start? Like, just go and figure it out. And like the forcefulness is what propels you.
Yes.
Because we literally just started in 2 weeks, and then we're like, well, fuck, we need a guest for next week. And it was like, you know, so it's,
yeah,
just,
I like that approach. And it gives you an opportunity to iterate too. When people, especially on the content side for our businesses, you know, I have people that I've mentored or advised in like website content, and they'll be like, okay, we're gonna, you know, create 30 pieces and then publish. And I'm like, no, publish immediately, find out how people are responding, and then iterate, listen to your audience, develop this relationship. Don't like go off in a corner and create this entire product and then show it to the world. Like, get real time data along the way. But that's a scarier thing to do sometimes.
Totally. But it's like the I love that, the iteration and the evolution. I mean, we talk about, Scout preaches this a lot, where you should feel like, if we listen to our first episode, it was fine, but it, you know, we've evolved and created a banter between us, and it's, you know, but it's like, if you looked back on your first episode and it was the same as what you are now 2 years ago, like, yeah, that should be a red flag too. Like, you should be improving over time.
And not only that, the more you create and the more you put out there, the more you find your jam. Like, you can totally go into a project with a brand guideline and a brand vision, but really once you get into the weeds, that's when it's born and that's when it takes shape and that's when it changes. And then you adjust based on, oh, that doesn't feel good anymore. That does feel good. This is going off. This is not going off. And then you just kind of do all these small pivots. But in order to find that equation, you have to put something out there.
Yeah. And you need to be malleable. Like, you need to be open to changing, because if you are, like you said, if you were starting a content driven business, website, and you had all this content and then you pushed it out and then it's like, oh wait, everyone is not vibing with this. And then I already created this like set in stone. I've like really married to this type of brand. Then what do you do? Like, you're gonna, you know, you're setting yourself up for failure that way. So that's really important.
I have a question about the newsletter, because in the newsletter, it starts with a quote from you that is quite profound, quite in tune, very self-aware, has a...
Well, let's read one of them. I wrote some of my favorite ones.
This is going to be very painful for me.
Oh, please. Own it, girl. You are so insightful. It's like maddening. So these are two from this week that really resonated with me. One was, hang on when you need to, let go when it is time. Above all, trust your instincts to tell you the truth about when it's time to make a move. And then another one, like, so simple, defend your health, your aspirations, your dignity, your space in your own life.
Yeah, every time I read them, I'm like, wow, they're just so on point and so articulate in such a poetic way. But I maybe this is just my reaction to quotes like this, but does it ever take it out of you to write a quote like that every week and to really think of it? Because what you're doing is
every day,
you're compiling a really large message and like putting it into a very manageable, bite-sized way of saying it, and so that people can digest it quite easily. And that's a lot harder than it seems. And so, does that emotionally take a toll on you because it is so personal and insightful, or is this something that frees you and liberates you?
Both, definitely both. I think there are some days when I sit down to write and it just, you know, it just really flows. Like I think we can all relate to like creating content, especially content that's more personal or coming from like a deeper kind of soul or spirit place. And then there are times when I literally have to pray to Mother Nature or spirit or whatever and be like, please, you know, guide me and give me something to share, when I feel like really kind of empty or drained. My lens when I write those few sentences for each day is to write to my sisters. So I have two younger sisters, and my, you know, role or identity as a sister is one of probably the most cherished in my life among all the kind of, you know, identities I carry. And one is 5 years younger than I am, and one is 8 years younger than I am. And so I really kind of write to myself at their age, but also to them about things that I wish I could tell myself, and that I'm really thankful I get a chance to tell them, you know, and they're amazing and teach me way more than I could ever teach them. But yeah, I think when you're creating something that's really personal or meaningful, sometimes it's really exhausting and sometimes it's really like fun and freeing and energizing, but it's kind of different day to day.
Yeah, I can totally see that. And then question, do they read your newsletter?
They do. But like, they, I haven't explicitly told them I'm writing to them.
Got it.
Well, sometimes I will. Sometimes I'll be like, Taylor, that was for you. You need to go write it. Like 130,000 people just read my message directly to you. And they love that.
That's so special. That's so special. And I don't think I've ever heard that, just because, and I think that's a really great piece of advice for people that might have writer's block too. Totally. Like, why don't you, you know, instead of, obviously you have to think of your audience in mind, but how do you just kind of like scale it down so it doesn't feel so overwhelming or impossible? Yeah. And it's like, I'm just going to chat with my sister. I'm going to give her some advice. Like, that to me seems so much more manageable and exciting and personal. Like, that is a really great piece of advice. I love that.
Well, I was going to say, that's our whole editorial lens with our voice as well, as actually like a sisterly voice across our site. And we, our editorial team, we are constantly going back to like, is this something, is this how a sister or a friend would talk to another? We don't want our tone at all to ever be like too many steps ahead of someone else. We want to be right in step. Like, I'm here, I'm with you. This is what I have to share that might be meaningful, take it or leave it. Like, and that's the lens that we, you know, if we come to something and we're like, okay, we're talking about the environment, but we're talking in a really like heavy-handed way, then we're like, scrap it. We have to totally change the tone. We have to talk about it the way that we would talk to our own, you know, family or dear friend. And I think that's been like a really guiding through line for just our voice. And I think that's helpful for any writer, is to be like, you know, really identify like, who are you writing to, and how does that really narrow in the way that you speak to your audience?
Yeah. I mean, you've come to the right place, because we love sisters over here. Yeah. We're part of the sisterhood. No, but that, I mean, it is true. And I think the foundation of our whole podcast has grown from that, where it feels like a sisterly chat when we have guests on, and it feels like a sleepover, and all of our listeners also feel like friends of
included
ours. We never want
to. Yep.
Yeah. Like, and as you said about, we don't want to be ahead of them. We want to be on their same playing field, which is how we approach our listeners. We're like, we're not like superior to you. Like, we're just, you know, sisters from San Diego. So like,
totally,
we want to be on your same level and parallel with you, not like reigning over you, which I think is a really great stance. And it helps people to feel more impacted by what you offer. So some big part of your entire existence and career is sustainability and ethical fashion and lifestyle and home and everything. And I don't know if this is like controversial, but whatever. Like, I guess historically, I've kind of seen like sustainability and ethically sourced products and consumerism to be not as cool, maybe.
Totally.
And like, maybe like not as sexy. And it's just like, oh, they're, or it's like, oh, they're, they don't have, they have limited resources, so it's not going to be as good as their counterpoint product. Whatever the connotations are. And I'm sure you had those before, and I'm sure everyone does. But when I come to the good trade, I don't feel limited. Like, I don't feel like you guys are not giving me the best product. Like, it really feels, and maybe it's just a testament to how much we've grown as a consumer, as consumers and as companies, to be able to create superior products that are better for the environment. So kind of touch on maybe busting that myth that people typically
have. Well, I think there's some truth to that myth. So we'll start there. We think about this for three different factors. We think about the aesthetic. So like, especially 5 or 6 years ago, the aesthetic for more sustainability kind of minded, especially in fashion, was like so granola and crunchy and like linen bag dress with clogs. Like, that was, there was this whole like style that went with it. So we've really done a lot of work to try to curate like what are brands that are more fashion forward, that incorporate like a sense of style, even if it's timeless pieces, like how are they drawing upon trends and color and so that's been really exciting to like see it evolve. The other two things that we look at are accessibility in terms of price. So that's another thing where like early on in the conversation, people were like, yeah, I'm not going to pay, you know, X amount for something that is sustainably made when I could, you know, look at fast fashion or other things. And I think there's been a really wonderful shift in mindset from consumers who are looking to invest in pieces that they love, that they get tailored to fit them well, that last them for a very long time, but also the price has been able to come down as there have been more like ethical, sustainable brands, and those brands have gotten larger and been able to leverage, you know, deeper, larger supply chains to kind of bring the price down. And then just like quality, like you mentioned too, like you want just as nice stuff, even though it's like ethically and sustainably made. And again, that's like really evolved in the last 5 or 6 years. I think one example of this, so our first article that ever went viral was 35 fair trade fashion brands that are betting against fast fashion. So it was like a guide to like 35 fair trade clothing brands. And we created this guide in like 2014, and we could not find 35 brands that were, you know, had ethical practices. Like it was pulling teeth. It took hours and hours of research. Now we update that guide at least twice annually, and we just have hundreds that we get to pick from. And so now we get to really pick from like, okay, we want a range of styles. We want a range of price accessibility. We want to make sure every brand is like inclusive in their model diversity and their size diversity. And so that's a really cool like temperature check on how much the industry has evolved in just, you know, half a decade.
I love that. Yeah. It makes, obviously, it's something where you can feel better about where you're putting your dollars, but then you don't have to sacrifice, like you said, quality or sacrifice aesthetics. Like the aesthetic on the brands that you guys are putting forth is like so on point, something that I would want anyways. So, totally. I mean, yeah, it's been incredible, the evolution of these types of brands that have been able to do what they can with ethically sourced operations, if you will. Okay. So one other, and I feel like you just have the best routines. I don't know. I have like a little hunch that you have like really great morning routines. We're big morning routine people here. So I'd love to hear kind of, what do you do daily for some self-care and mindfulness, just to maintain mindfulness throughout your day? What are some things that you do?
Yeah, I feel like I was in such a great rhythm, and then COVID-19 happened, and now my life is like, you know, completely blown up, and all the regular touch points of like the things you build into your rituals, like before you get to work, how you handle your commute, the first few minutes you spend at work, like that transition back home, all of that, I feel like I had spent really like a few years like developing my little things that were meaningful and gave back to me throughout that process. And now it's all like gone to shit because it's just completely different.
I'm sure not, but.
Well, it's changed. It's had to evolve.
But like it's different. And so, but something that's like really soothing for me right now, that's kind of like the cornerstone of my routine, and this isn't happening in the morning, but it's being able to exercise every day. And by exercise, I mean like just like move my body, like gentle yoga, or I walk the stairs outside my house, or just do some type of movement. And I cannot express how freeing it has been to not have it dictated to me what kind of movement I'm doing. Cause usually I would go to workout classes, but I can't do that right now. But to actually be able to choose like, oh, I need something more restorative now, or I need something with cardio today, has been like such a really beautiful way to get back in touch with my body. And even my like hormonal cycle, and really paying attention to like at what points of my cycle I need cardio or I need to be more restful. And so I feel like I've really gotten to know myself better through that. And so that routine, I always end with like a few minutes of journaling after that, even if it's just like literally 5 minutes, to like write something that I'm thankful for, or that I'm feeling was like really beautiful about the day. And so I do this in between when I sign off from work and then head into the rest of the evening. And it's a really great transition while I'm working from home to like designate the difference between like my work day and my evening.
So I am like, there's so many things that you've said throughout this time that we've talked that's resonated with me. But something that's really coming up for me is that in COVID-19, I've been in therapy since 14, since I struggle with a mental illness. And so I have been forced to get to know myself and forced to get to know my habits and like what my body says. So I'm like, Mads can attest, I'm like quite in tune with things. Mm-hmm. But during COVID-19 and during quarantine, I'm uncovering so many other layers of myself that are so beautiful. And I'm falling in love with the process of learning myself because it's different every day. But sometimes I get fucking tired. Like, I'm like, I don't want to tune in. I don't want to like hear the subtleties of my mindfulness and my self-awareness. And like, I just want to fucking be. Like, I just want to be without effort. And it's like, it's such a, I think I'm in the middle of that breakthrough. Yeah. And so it's that like that resistance is happening where it's taking me back to like my ego and my limiting beliefs. And I'm trying to break through from that. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I didn't mean to update you on my life, but I am wondering for you if the impetus, if the impetus to being this self-aware, because usually for me, it's because I'm bipolar. Was it your health scare that made you this way? Have you always been this way? Or has it been a practice that slowly developed and fallen into your lap?
That's such a great question. It was totally my health situation that, you know, getting a tough diagnosis, having to learn, I had to make like some pretty massive lifestyle changes in like diet and stress, and therapy was like a huge, huge part of the healing process for me. And then I, you know, I still have this chronic condition. So like, if I'm not in touch with my body, I know, you know, like my body like lets me know like this isn't working. And so that I got the diagnosis when I was 25, I believe. So I've had like, I don't know whether it's like just adulthood, like 5 or 6 years later, or, and also this kind of, you know, big part of my life. But I think it's both of those things that I've like really come to cherish, taking care of myself and my body and listening and just like trusting that intuition. I grew up in the Midwest, and like, there was not a lot of literacy about like understanding that your body knew what it needed. And, you know, even like intuitive eating and stuff, like I would just like eat sugar and bread all the time. And then, you know, after kind of going through the health journey, I was like, oh, there are real cravings that I have, both like physical, but also emotional, that I am needing to like understand and take better care and nourish like my body and soul and spirit in a way that feels better for me.
What do you do when you get angry? Like, or are you past that? Are you in such an acceptance mode of your diagnosis and your situation that this is the way you have to live your life? Because I always practice acceptance, because these are the things like I have to journal every morning, I have to meditate, I have to do things or else my bipolar flares up. And sometimes every now and then I get angry, and I like telling people that because people think I have like my mental health figured out. But sometimes I'm like, fuck this, like that sucks. But I know that the alternative is even worse and that these practices are really meant to nourish your body. Do you ever get overwhelmed by this task?
Definitely. And I think anger has become one of my most treasured and valued emotions I have in my life because it directs me to protect myself. You know, my anger usually surfaces at people or injustices or societal norms that are causing me anxiety, and therefore, you know, my body is like reacting in a certain way. But I think that anger instructs me to like, okay, this thing isn't good for me, or I can't handle it right now. Like, I'm not in a place to engage with it. And it helps me set boundaries in my life.
Girl, I think I need to like set up a group with you. I don't know. Yes. I'm going to set up a group.
Let's do it.
Truly, like your spirit is just, I feel like I have
it's divine.
Softened.
Aww.
It's for sure divine.
I feel pacified. I feel like I am a little baby being tucked in to my bed. Like this is exactly what we need during this time. And I know a lot of people are going to love this conversation just because I think, and obviously everyone, if you're listening to this, you have to subscribe to The Daily Good because you're just missing out on this like tender, reassuring way to start your day. Like it just, that is what it is. And the fact that you have committed your life's work to creating that feeling is really powerful.
Shall we ask our last question?
Oh, yes, we shall.
Let's do it.
Okay, Amy Ann, we always ask our guests this. If you could brag about one thing in your life and not being humble, don't even being worried about sounding arrogant or cocky or whatever, what would you brag about?
Okay, one of the things I am most proud of in my whole life is my almost 10-year marriage. And it just like takes so much work and attention to love someone else. Not that like my husband is so lovable. It's like really, you know, frustrating because he's like probably way easier to love. But I feel like, you know, like, of course I'm proud of my accomplishments. I'm proud of my company. I'm proud of many things, but I think, you know, like just the day in, day out, like work of being seen and seeing someone else is something I'm really proud of in my life.
Oh my God, I've totally given the same answer. I love it. I love it so much. It's people don't think to be proud of their marriages, and it's
totally,
it's the most illuminating self-work, discovery, hard, beautiful, loving thing you can do. And it is different when you get married because all of a sudden your lives are so intertwined in every fucking way. But anyways, that was beautiful. And we love you.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Okay, tell everyone where they can find you. Okay. Oh, yeah, go Mads. You do that.
Oh, tell everyone where they can find you. Yeah, obviously find The Good, The Daily Good, The Good Trade, all the everything.
Yes, awesome. So you can find The Good Trade at thegoodtrade.com or at The Good Trade on any social channels. And then The Daily Good, you can sign up in our link in bio on Instagram, or if you go to our website, there's like a million places to sign up for the newsletter. And that is such a great way to kind of like enter our community and start being a part of what we're doing.
Thank you for coming. And you can find us at OK Sis Podcast. Love you, sisters.